Let's go.
Welcome to this week's edition of Darn Cherry Grapevine, voted by Apple Podcasts, the biggest and best of 2020, Dad. And we just want to shout out to our sponsor, Spread.ca, First Nations owned online casino and sportsbook. Sign up now and you put grapes and you get a they'll match your deposit $500.
I'm taking Brady.
I'm taking Mahomes, I think.
All right, I'm taking Brady. I'm not going against the Boston guy.
No, I like Brady, but I just... Let me ask you then, just quickly, before we get into... We taped this on Sunday, so this is the Super Bowl. This after Sunday morning, so we'll be doing this afternoon. Who's got more to lose, Brady or Mahomes?
I think Mahomes has. I mean, Brady has been there. He's won so many. If he loses, you know, they say, oh, well, he should have lost to a younger guy and all that stuff and everything, but... I'm still going for Brady.
So is that the same as who is the most pressure on him?
I don't know pressure, because I just think that if Brady loses, it's well, you know, he's been the thing with Mahomes. How could you lose to a guy that's 18 years old? You know what I mean? And that's all you've heard about. But you know the one thing I liked, Dad, was they showed Mahomes getting off the plane. And he had a three-piece suit on.
Oh, yeah.
And a shirt and tie.
Sharp,
yeah, so he's just...
Dressing like hockey players now.
Yep. So that a lot happened in the... Well, it's also your birthday. So wish you a happy birthday.
And the only guy I know that's my birthday, or I know, was February 5th, was Jason LaSalle. And he's the guy that put in my dock down in Wolf Island. I've never seen anybody built like that guy. You know, in hockey or anything, it's unbelievable. And I said to him, do you lift weights? He says, no, I just work on the barge. He fixes
all
the docks.
So this is your new dock. This was your new dock, as opposed to the old dock.
Boy, the old
dock. That was how old? 40 years old?
Tim, you and Stephen, cousin
Stephen, Brian, myself, and Cindy helped. But it was you, Uncle Rich, your brother, and Mel Price.
Richard,
That did all the heavy lifting.
Yeah. You were in the water, and Mel, you know, I have to tell you, I was in Aunt Lucy's. It's closed now.
In Kingston.
And I was sitting, and there was a guy named Beans Reardon. I never forgot his name. He said, oh, you're from Wolf Island. I said, well, no, I live in Wolf Island now. And he said, every night I see a jerk walking up and down with a canoe, picking up rocks and throwing them in. I said, it was me. And I those cribs are still there. And
it goes to show you, though, it's not just strength, because like Steven, our cousin Steven's a big guy.
Yeah, well, tell what you were lifting.
It's how you lift it, right? Like Mel was, again, it was like Brady and Mahomes. Mel's how much older than Steven and I. And he could lift those. He was using old cement utility poles. And he could lift them with a sling. And Steven and I were grunting, and he's like, get out of the way. And he knew how to do it, and... It was embarrassing, actually.
It was.
We had three cribs, and so I have to tell a story. And I never brag. I try not to brag.
You don't, Dad. I mean, it was really... And people have to explain what the cribs are, that most people on the St. Lawrence River have floating docks.
Yeah.
And you said, I'm going to build three cribs that the ice won't move my dock. And that was what your goal was, right?
Yeah. And Mel says, okay, then we got to get cement. And anybody that had an accident in Kingston, and I guess we can say it now, and he put on a thing and he'd bring it over. And I had an electric saw that we used to saw through, and I sawed them. I remember I was up in the top sawing.
Yeah, I had a saw because they were cement poles, and they had rebarb in them. And...
Yeah, they had, they were anyhow. So I, never mind that, we had that there. So I, one time you and I, Cindy, we drove down, and I'm out getting gas, and the guy says, you live in Wolf Island? I said, yeah, well, I got a place in Wolf Island. He says, well, we had really trouble with the docks this year. Don't worry about my dock. My dock's been there for 40 years, 40 to 50 years, you know, and I'm bragging. He says, well, you never know. And you and I drove up, and I walked out, and there wasn't a stick of wood. There wasn't.
It was like, you know what, Dad? It reminded me of the Twilight Zone. We went over to look at the dock, and it was completely gone.
Like, it was like, I said, am I?
Like, and this is like, what, a 40-foot dock? 50-foot
dock? Oh, this is a big dock. This is a biggie.
Like a 40 or 50, this isn't like a 10-foot dock. No, no, this is a biggie. 40, 50-foot dock.
And
with a flagpole on it.
The flagpole.
Everything.
So I said to you, Cindy, you won't believe this. And you said, why do you have the flagpole over in the bay? And there was, what happened was, it was like the magic storm, or what do they call it? Perfect storm. The dock had lifted the dock. And when they lifted the dock, the storm came, an awful storm. The wind, and blew it right off. And there wasn't a stick left. It was unbelievable.
Well, what the unique thing was is that when it lifted, the whole top part of it stayed in one piece.
Yeah.
So it floated and then went down into this little bay, and there it sat with the flagpole and everything that was. And I go, I couldn't believe that. I said, why would you move the flagpole?
Why would you move the flagpole over there? And it was unbelievable. So anyhow, Jason LaSalle, he put in the new dock. It was a beautiful dock.
That's what happened. You brag.
I bragged and.
And the Lord paid you back for bragging.
It was incredible.
What was that story?
Well, it was
Twilight
like,
Zone.
It was, because when you just, like 20 minutes earlier, you had said, my dock hasn't moved in 40 years, and we go there and it's gone.
Yeah. And you know, at one time, and this is a true story, I know we're on the cottage. At one time, you could cast and catch a fish every time. Every time you'd catch something, and if you wanted to catch a fish, you just buy the dock, you big rock bass, and you.
Tell about the story about you with Mr. Bob Azumi about casting or toward the dock.
Well, Americans, I guess a lot of Americans listen to this show too. Americans come close to your dock.
Well, a lot of goofy Canadians do it too. Fishermen.
No, they don't.
No. I watch a lot of Canadian fishing shows, and they do.
Well, they're not supposed to.
Right.
No. And they don't never
it's
come
etiquette.
Rude.
Fishing etiquette.
You just don't go near a guy's dock. So what was it?
Well, Bob Azumi was...
Oh, yeah. So Bob Azumi, that morning I'd watched Bob Azumi, and he is the fisherman of a fisherman.
Yeah,
right?
He was the big Canadian fishing guru at a show and everything.
Yeah. So he was way up high, and his brother, Doug...
happened was you were watching a TV show, and you saw Bob Azumi was teaching people how to cast toward people's docks on TV. So fast forward, a couple months later, you're at a trade show, and Bob Azumi is up on stage talking about...
He can't see down below.
He can't see because his brother was, doing the mics or the sound and all this. So... That's
you give me the mic.
And that's when you took over, and Bob Azumi can't see who's talking.
And I said to him, yeah, well, we don't fish around a docks. We're Canadian, and all that stuff and everything. And he said, and then he heard my voice. He kind of knew. And he says, I'll just go at 100 feet out. And I said, I'll throw a rock at you.
You know what the thing is, though, with people fishing at docks, which the boat people don't get, is a lot of people's water intake is by the dock. So if you got a boat there, even if you have an electric motor, you still got oil and everything, and you're taking it in. It's just,
Well, can I tell the story that after in the summer I was living down there, and I went to the cottage, and there was a little note with his stationery. He said, hey, Don, it's Bob. I caught all the fish by your dock.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I still have the note that he left on your door at the cottage.
Well, at one time, to get on the other thing, I don't know, we're supposed to be a hockey show. You could cast and you could catch a fish. And I remember I caught 400 and perch. We let them go naturally. And now you can't catch a thing. You can't. And it's not the mussels.
The zebra mussels were the first thing in there. And then the gobies came in.
It's not them. It's the cormorants. And everybody on the island knew the cormorants were eating all the bass, and they ate everything. You used to see them going down into the Thousand Islands and everything. And now the government would say you couldn't destroy, you couldn't do anything to them, and now you can. It's too late. There's not a thing.
Tell the story. Can we tell the story about you going down it? Because you were good friends with the next door neighbors. They were Americans, Dugan and all that. And remember, I was complaining about all the 18. There was people. It was like 18 to 20 inch pike swimming along the shoreline. And you could go and poke them. And I said, Dad, come down and look at these pike. They're swimming close to shore. And remember, you found out, you blamed the people next door what they were doing when they caught pike.
When Americans catch pike, they grab them by the eyes.
And they blind them.
Yeah. And they, I don't know anything about that.
I remember you saying, what are you doing picking them up by the eyes?
Yeah.
You calling me chicken blanks.
You call them chicken. You got to
know. And the guy goes, well, they open up their mouth when they pick them up by the eyes. And you go, well, if I pick you up by your eyes, you'd open up your mouth too.
So you straighten them out to teach them that you go underneath their gills.
Yeah, you're not,
to
it
pick
hurts
them
your
up.
Gills a little.
You
but
don't. Yeah, well, better the gills than blinding them and then throwing them back in the water. Now they're blind.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was.
Oh, he was a great guy. Right?
Yeah, Dugan was a good guy. So let's get into the hockey, Dad. What did you see this weekend? I guess let me start off with the thing. Everybody in Vancouver is saying, "What is wrong with Vancouver?" I mean,
that was pathetic. This is Sunday morning. I watched the game Saturday night, and I watched the whole game. I tuned in a little late. I thought they had a 5-minute major. At the start,
the Leafs. I mean, it wasn't even a contest with the Leafs last night.
No, I mean, it was pathetic. Surely they're going to come up with a game, and you know, I hate to say it, but I've seen it before, and I'd hate to think it that they played last night like they wanted the coach fired. Now, I hate to say that. Dallas Green is a good, you know. I predicted he would coach the National Hockey League. But nobody could play that bad. No, nobody could play. I have to laugh at the shots. They got those shots. I mean, there's nobody standing in front. I see Simmons now standing in front, eh?
Yeah.
See, he got 2 goals last night.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We'll get to talk about that, but just get back to that for a second. That's the one thing I've noticed now, that like Richie in Boston. You see him now on the power play?
Yeah, and he's playing.
He's got 4 goals. He's standing in front of the net. You see Corey Perry last night.
Orangeville, Ontario?
Yeah. Corey Perry standing in front of the net last night for the winner. The guy, it seemed Simmons. It almost seems like like 3 or 4 years ago, nobody stood in front of the net. Like that was old-time hockey. Yeah. Now it seems that they're doing that. But
Can I ask a question from a fan's point of view? Well, isn't that because they can? Because if the defenseman hits them, they get a penalty?
Well, what
do you do to a...
Nobody's going to cross-check and look for Simmons or Richie.
Or even Perry, he'd give it to you.
Perry, he's pretty good too. But, you know, it's
It just seems like you touch a player now, it's a penalty. So that's what I would think.
Well, it used to be that way, but they get those big guys in front. So nobody's going to cross-check Simmons too much. And nobody wants to look for trouble. He's looking for trouble. They get 2 goals last night.
Yeah. So what do you think, what's going on with Vancouver? Like, I felt bad for Holpe. Did you see him stare down the...
Yeah, I saw Holpe looking at the bench. What is going on? I thought I was coming to a good club.
Well, what a nightmare for him.
He leaves Washington thinking he's going to go, and nobody could be that bad. I mean, guys disappear. Peterson and Horvat, those guys.
It must be tough for a coach, you know, to sit and watch Peterson and Bo Horvath, who seems to have a lot to say about stuff.
Well, that's true. He does.
And absolutely steal your money. He played almost 20 minutes last night, had 1 shot on goal.
Yeah, but how long are their contracts for?
Well, that's what we were saying, Dad. Did you ever play in a team that just like last
year? We had 1-year contracts.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the secret, right? I mean, that keeps them honest. They have to worry about their paycheck next year.
I don't care.
Pride.
But I like to go over this again. I like to really go over this. Now, you tell me where I'm wrong. Now, the Leafs, again, I'm going to say, Vancouver's lead the power play goals, though, aren't they, or something?
No. I think Edmonton's leading power play goals.
Anyhow, now let's talk about the Leafs. You know I'm a Leaf fan. Boston first, and then Leafs. I have Leaf on my truck, and I used to send away for all the Garth Bush and all those guys and everything. Now, I cheer for the Leafs. I really do. But I cannot understand the general manager.
Dubas.
Dubas. I just don't understand it. Every guy he's picked up, on the free agency. Simmons, Spezza, Thornton, they've all scored. What they've got? Tell it.
I think they have they got 42 goals this year, and they're all. I only think they're all North American, but they almost have almost all North Americans on their team.
And they're just flying along. They're looking great, and the whole deal. And he drafts nothing, but Europeans. Check it out. What he picks out is older free agency and trades and Simmons and guys like that. He does a great job. And then he drafts nothing but Europeans.
Maybe he has to justify all the money that the Leafs spend on sending their scouts over to Europe.
But that must cost a lot of money.
No.
It doesn't make any sense to me that you can see the guys that are scoring all the goals, that are doing all the work, that are doing everything. That Posegan, they picked up guys like that. They're all North Americans, and yet he drafts nothing but Europeans.
How about Jason? I remember when they got Jason Spezza, all the pundits, as they say, what are they getting an old guy like that for? Yeah. Can't skate.
And now he's a hero.
He got a hat trick.
Remember how angry I was when he was doing his debut in Toronto and the coach didn't start him at the ACC?
Yeah. Babcock didn't start him.
And I said, because you would have done that, because there he was. He probably had his family. It was on hockey night in Canada. Oh. I mean, it was really nice that they got him back here in Toronto, and the coach doesn't start him.
Well, that's Babcock, right?
I don't know. That was cruel.
It was cruel.
I remember when the Bruins come in, and I had, I'm trying to think of a left winger, and it used to be really something to start, stand at the Toronto Maple Leaf Gardens.
Of course, on Hockey Night Canada. Yeah.
And I looked out, and the left winger was Peter Sturgeon. I remember forgetting. Yeah. I think he wrecked his knee after. But he was standing at the blue line, and he had tears rolling down. And I thought, I didn't think anything of it. I had him playing defense. I just wanted him to be on the ice. Al Secord.
You used to tell me that when you'd go into a city, they would come up to you and say, oh, this is so-and-so's hometown. Would you start them just so that everyone could see him, lined up? And that's the difference between you and a lot of the coaches today, right?
Yeah,
and they
don't
just
know.
Don't think about stuff
but
like that.
But can you imagine? If guy like Nyland was scoring at the start of the year, right? He's not scoring now. But he was scoring at the start of the year. Can't they look out and see the guys that are scoring and are carrying? I mean, Matthews, he's an American. He's carrying, they're carrying the club.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
Well, how long has he been GM now for the Leafs?
I'm not knocking him.
It's just a strange strategy.
Strange.
That I'm going to draft all Europeans, but yet I'm going to sign all older Canadians.
And the guys that are carrying are older guys. And how about Spezza's third goal?
Well, it gets walked around that.
I've come to a conclusion. I used to watch the games all the time as a fan, and now I watch them as a coach. Figure that out. I don't think the guys can play defense now. I think the forwards are every bit as good. I think the goaltenders are every bit as good, if not better. But I don't think they can play defense. If I had ever had a guy walk around me, like Spezza walk around in that third goal, I'd be gone to Port Huron or something. I would not be in the American Hockey League.
Can I tell a story about Spezza up at Bobby Orr's golf tournament? Do you remember when we were up there and Jason was at their golf tournament and the photographer said we want all the celebrities together to take one big picture? And this was really nice. So I was standing beside the photographer and Jason was standing beside you. And Jason, and it was outside, and Jason had his sunglasses on. So I said, come on. And I said under my breath, I said, come on, Jason, take those sunglasses off. Take those sunglasses off for the picture. And all of a sudden, you rammed your elbow in his gut. And Jason sort of like woke up and took his sunglasses off. And so the photographer looks at me and says, you knew your dad was going to do that, didn't you? I says, dad has to explain to him how the world works. And you have to take off your sunglasses if you're a star, when you're taking a picture. And I hope it stayed with him like that.
Was that Bobby Orr's?
That was at Bobby Orr's golf tournament. And did the photographer ever laugh? He said, oh, that is so funny. He goes, that your dad would do that.
The last one we were at was Matthews was there. And I think they asked Matthews, and Bobby Orr's is, I think Matthews thought, you know, he was going out and play. I'm just saying this. I'm just thinking this. So I thought he was going out. He thought he was going out and just play, you know. And he had to do what I had to do. He had to stay and meet everybody.
He was at that hole.
But you know what? That's a good, like, I know he didn't like it, but that's a good idea.
It's a great idea.
Like, for what Bobby Orr does in his golf tournament is that Bobby Orr.
Past tense, I think.
That's gone.
Bobby used to be in a par three.
Right.
And he would sit there, and then I guess Matthews was there too at the par three.
And I was there.
So every foursome got to meet Dad and Bobby and Matthews.
Get their goodie bag.
I don't think Matthews thought he was good.
Yeah, and yeah, well, it's tougher on Matthews because you got to meet everybody, right?
You had to meet everybody. But as
someone, if you were playing in the golf tournament, I think that would be great.
Oh, and sure.
Oh, I think it was great.
And so, and Bobby always took the shot. What was it? Best ball? Or?
He would hit, and then if somebody in the foursome got closer to the pin, then they got into a draw.
He
for
was
a prize.
The boy. Could he?
But
ever...
he would get it on the green 99%
of
the time.
Oh, tell a story about Derek Sanderson.
Yeah. So, I was there 1 year, and Bobby Orr. So Bobby Orr's going up, and he was a par three. He was probably about 150 yards, and every shot, like, it was amazing. Every shot was like within, I would say, 20 feet of the pin, if not closer. And, you know, everybody's hacking around. So Derek Sanderson comes in. Derek's playing Derek, and he's kind of loud and everything, and he's smoking a big cigar. And he goes, Bobby, you can't golf. And again, so Bobby's hit 10 in a row, right, with on the green.
But let's say it's him. No one would heckle Bobby.
No, so
he heckled Bobby.
Nobody heckled. So
I don't think Bobby.
So Sanderson comes in and goes, you don't know how to play, or you don't know how to play. You're going to shank it. Watch. You're going to slice it right into the woods. Sure enough, it was just like Caddyshack. Rodney Dangerfield and boom, right into the green.
Bobby wasn't too
happy. No, he wasn't too happy. Yeah, see, I told you what you did. And, mm-hmm. and it was. And so that was the only time Bobby missed the green is when Derek was kind of
ripping. And everyone laughed.
Nobody laughed.
Nobody laughed.
Derek.
Tell a story, Cindy, about the time Bobby is a fisherman of fishermen.
You got to be careful, you know, and I don't think many people would even get the joke and all this. And they, because, you know, it's great fishing up in Parry Sound.
He's smoking a cigar.
And he's and all this. So they're talking about, and Bobby was saying he doesn't brag much. But he was saying that he was catching these 3 and 4 pound smallmouth bass, right? And he was
released.
And I said to get into the conversation, well, what did you use for bait? And I said it with that type of connotation. And he gave me a dirty look, and he says, well, a lure, of course. Very dirty look. And I don't think a lot of the people realize that that was sort of a bad thing to say.
Oh, you don't say that to a fisherman.
You don't say that to a fisherman.
A real fisherman.
A real fisherman doesn't use frogs and all
stuff. And you know, I
knew what I was doing, too. I should have known better. I did, but I knew that I wanted... You know, I knew I shouldn't have asked it, but I asked it anyway. So you get in the car. 3 hours later, the first thing you get in the car, you say, why would you ask Bobby Orr what he uses for bait? I go, I know. I don't know what got into me. I said, and he goes, I don't know why he would ask him that. It was pretty funny. And it was a mistake. Don't ever ask a real fisherman what he uses for bait.
I remember that. And when you said lures, oh boy, I knew there was going to be trouble. But you know, getting back to hockey again, we keep jumping around.
I seem like I get you off on a tangent, so sorry, folks.
So I got to ask you another quick question, though, Dad. We're going, what's wrong with Edmonton?
Well, the goaltending's not, 6-4 last night. I mean, what was it they were?
The shots at one time were 18-8, and they were losing 3-2.
Yeah, it's sad to see. It's sad to see McDavid and Draisaitl. I mean, you know, I would play those two guys together. I mean, I would play them.
They played like the last 5 minutes of the game. But I remember you always used to tell me that there's nothing worse than a goalie letting in the first shot. And they were down, 50 seconds into the game.
I'll tell you a story. This happened in St. Louis. I'm coaching. Honestly, this happened. And it wasn't, I'm not naming the guy's name.
But it wasn't Hardy.
It wasn't Hardy. So you can figure.
You're in Colorado.
Right, we're in Colorado, and we're in St. Louis. We're in St. Louis, and we're out shooting them 10 to nothing. 10 on the board. It had a big board there, 10 to nothing I swear this happened.
Which probably meant around 15, right? Because they only
did. No, they only counted. It was 10 to nothing. And the guy stepped over the red line, and he just fired one on net. And it went in, this guy, this goaltender, honestly. And I looked up, and it's 1-0 for them, and they've had one shot on net, and we've had 10. I yanked him. I never yanked
him. You yanked him and put in Hardy. What does that say?
Yeah, but and you know, we were doing pretty...
Just to jump on that, we were doing the questions, so one person wrote in, if Hardy Astrom was so bad, how bad were the backups? But Bob, we had
Billy McKenzie. We walked into Boston. We beat Boston. We tied, used to tie back then, Montreal, and we beat Quebec with Billy McKenzie. Little guy, little weak goalie, wasn't very big, but he was good. And then we come home, and I swear to God, I can still see Winsink sliding into him and wrecking his knee. And we were done after that. We had to use Hardy. And, I remember outside where we practiced, and it was an old tree there. And I said, these guys with Colorado are as good guys as they were in Boston. They're all good guys. And I said, now, am I going to turn on them? Because if I had turned on them, I would have had the job next year. I said, no, I'm going to treat them the same way as I treated the Boston guys. And I got fired anyhow.
So it must have been quite the fanfare when you were coaching Colorado and you went back to Boston for the first game.
Oh, that was unbelievable. I had a...
And you won, and Colorado won.
You know, I'll tell you a funny story. They had a president called Paul Mooney. I think he was the president or something, wasn't he?
Yeah, something.
And he had a beautiful Jag. I remember it was green. Jaguar, and he used to make the guys that were on the circus, you could walk up the ramp at the back and you were right there, you're right in the garden, and he used to make them walk around the front, come up by the elevator, and they were really mad at him. So what they did was they saved all the elephant dung, I guess they call it. And when they left, they buried his car in the elevator.
Well, I remember that he got really mad because you were good friends with the Bull Gang.
Yeah.
We had little stickers, Rocky Hockey stickers.
Rocky Hockey.
Yeah, they were
and,
good stickers.
You gave a whole bunch to him, and the guys, the Bull Gang, went around and were putting them all over the place.
I just asked to be fired. I remember the first time, I couldn't believe it when I went to Boston. I couldn't believe a bench like Bobby Orr, Phil Esposito, and you know, Carol Vadney. These are really something. And the bench, remember all, and I looked down where the guys went in and out. There was nails going
right by the and the gate.
Going out the gate, and there was nails sticking up. So the next day, I'm pounding the nails in. I went and got a hammer, and so the guys wouldn't strip their skates. And all of a sudden, I see this guy beside me. You can't do that. And I look up, and here's a guy in overalls, and nice guys and everything. He was a carpenter. He's, you can't do that. I said, can't do what? He's, you can't use that hammer here. He says, that's a carpenter's job. His union was really... I never forgot. I just kept on hanging.
So would he have been part of the Bull Gang or
No, this was
a union guy. Oh, okay.
It was, and I remember the guy. Remember the guy, what he looked like, but I couldn't believe how bad the benches were.
Well, that's just hard to believe that the coach of the NHL hockey team would be hammering the nails on a bench.
It was awful. It was terrible.
Sort of hard to believe.
I mean, Boston Bruins. So I was right down in amongst the players, and I really liked it. Like, I couldn't see too well, but I was in amongst the players. And then they built them. And then Scotty Bowman, he used to have, when he'd come in, he'd have that he was above everybody.
He would elevate. He'd have like a little
bench.
And he could see.
So he actually brought that step on the road. Yeah. So when he was in another team's thing.
Yeah, and he could see above. And... Harry fixed all of our bench too, and then I was above them. And I often think of the poor people. And next time you're watching, if the guy doesn't move up and down, the guy, people sitting back paying all that money in back of the glass. I'm thinking,
Well, sometimes I know that you mentioned that if someone was really heckling you, you wouldn't move as much. Just so
I would,
couldn't
yeah.
See. I mean, I remember you telling me that story.
Can I tell a quick story about coaching? But that, like that was, remember we were talking to Peter DeBoer.
He was Peter DeBoer,
and he coached Kitchener, I guess it was, right?
Kitchener Rangers.
And so there was old-time building in Kitchener.
And they had no glass in the back.
They have no glass in the back, so it's basically the players, Peter DeBoer, and then the fans. And they're all older season seat holders. So yeah, Peter
couldn't be nice.
He had to be nice to them because they've been there forever. And he says, we didn't do well in the power play. The old guys were like, well, I guess they didn't practice the power play this week, did they, Norm? No, I guess they're going to have to do it. And then they get scored on it. Well, I guess they didn't practice the penalty kill, and they're going to have to work on that. And he says, we'd be losing, and I'd just be seething, and I have to hear these guys just saying it loud enough. Well, that goalie, I don't know about him. I would have pulled him if I was the coach. But
he's got to be nice to the
guys. You got to be nice to him. You can't say anything. So, yeah. So I think the one thing, too, Dad, last night watching this is Sunday, watching the thing is you've always said about McDavid roaring past those guys, and last night he almost got it again.
Cutting in around the outside. Yeah. I don't like him cutting around the outside because you cut around the outside and you get a guy like Giordano. Remember, yeah. Tripped him.
Well, that was like last night. He didn't trip him, but he gave him a little whack on the feet, and he went down.
Yeah,
and then
don't know what to do, in McDavid. I mean, the best hockey player in the world. But that's how he hurt his knee.
But you can't, if you're a guy, you just can't let him walk around you.
Like, I'd trip him.
You take the penalty.
He has an open net. Ended up, and they tripped him as he went into the goalie.
And then he got the penalty.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I know we're going to wrap it up soon, but I got to get it in that, Dad, we are starting Coach's Closet on Valentine's Day. So that's...
You know what? Tell us what closest... Coach's Closet is.
Well, it is that your foundation, Don Cherry's Pet Rescue Foundation, puts a lot of memorabilia and also of sports memorabilia, plus a lot of your ensembles, five of your great suits with shirts and tie.
Jackets.
And cap. Yes, not a suit, a jacket and your shirt. And anyway, the people can bid on it. And so it runs, it runs till the end of March about. And if they go to the Coop, COOP, Inc., INK.
John the Coop.
Yeah, John owns the Coop. Go to Coop, Inc., and you can check out everything that's going to be online auction.
And all money goes to?
100% of all your winning bids goes to the Don Cherry Pet Rescue Foundation. And people got to realize that this stuff isn't on consignment like a lot of stuff. You know what I mean?
What consignment?
Well, consignment means a lot of them, these high-end sports, the people that donate it get a piece of the action back. Like if there's...
Hirsch gave you $6,000 the other day.
Yeah. He gave Hirsch. Toward the...
Frozen Pond.
He gave money to the foundation. So what we do is the rescue groups, they apply for a funding and they meet the criteria that the foundation has put out and we just give the money.
Well, you do a great job, Cindy. You and you work hard at it and at least I can do. I got all these jobs. I got all these jackets and I guess we got to go now. We've been going long enough, yeah?
Yep. And we just want to wish... Steve Ludzik, all the best.
Oh, Steve, I know he's in the hospital. He had a little tough time. And I remember Steve when he took over from me. I drove down to his house. He said, well, we're going to... I said, Steve, never say when you take over from a coach, you're going to really do, you know, get in shape and everything. I'll never forget. But Steve, we wish you the best of luck. And we're
going to... He was one of the best dressed coaches.
Oh, he was sharp dressed. The only problem is when he get on and skate with the players, he was better skater than the players.
So I just want to wish Steve good luck, and we'll be talking to you next week. And again, this is Sunday, so I'm taking the Chiefs, and Dad, you're taking Brady.
I'm taking Brady. Never bet against the Boston guy.